Hello and welcome to the shortcast for Wednesday, March 26th, 2014, presented by the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. Today's episode is a review of Nikki Jabor's new book, Groundbreaking Food Gardens, 73 Plans That Will Change the Way You Grow Your Garden. Nikki was a guest on the show before to discuss her book, The Year-Round Vegetable Gardener. And this latest text happened to arrive while I was in the process of putting together the interview with Michael Judd. And I thought that Groundbreaking Food Gardens is a nice addition to the work that Michael did because of all of the garden designs that are here. There's a wide variety of designs. There are gardens of all sizes, in all kinds of locations and varying conditions, with sidebars for more information like lasagna gardening, or living walls, and I could sit and detail every garden in this book because of what they have to offer, but I just want to touch on a few that caught my eye, and in no particular order, I'll begin with Kenny Point's Backyard Beekeeper's Garden, which is on page 236. And this one caught me because it begins by talking about the decline of bee populations. Having talked with Dennis Van Engelsdorp about this condition and his encouraging us to keep bees, about how important this kind of a garden is. And I'll also admit that I'm working on a beekeeper's garden for a friend of mine, though I hope they don't listen to the show because I might wind up giving that away as they don't know that that's coming. But looking at the suggestions that he has and being able to introduce many of these into my friend's backyard. And Kenny includes not only fruits and vegetables that will feed us, but also other bee-friendly plants that happen to have edibles. Things like juneberries and filberts or elderberries, apple trees, some fruiting shrubs, blueberries, and kiwi vines. And thinking about how all of this could be adapted to a zone 1 or zone 2 garden for someone who keeps bees. The next garden that stood out to me was Marjorie Harris's partially shaded vegetables, because the checkerboard pattern that she has with this installation is visually appealing, but there's also a reason for it, that by using light-colored stone for the non-plantable areas, they help reflect light back to the plants within that shade. And then Marjorie also includes some tricks for overcoming shade, and those are some issues that I happen to deal with here where I am, and find those very useful to my work that I'll be doing. The next two caught me because they deal with not only smaller spaces, but also shade. The first is Andrea Bellamy's Beautiful Balcony Edibles. And this is a small garden that combines plants into containers so that we get to kind of stack functions while stacking our edibles together. And she talks about how you can use these as a screen while still producing food. There's no reason why, even with a small space, that we can't grow some of our own food while also beginning to build habitat and implement what we're learning within permaculture, that there are very few reasons why we can't do some of this. And the next garden by Kathy Martin is an urban shade garden. And I think about how many people live in cities. And again, that there are things that we can do within shady areas, within urban environments, to change the space around us in order to have a garden that works. That we can find some space close to home, again in zone 1 or zone 2, where we can develop a garden so that we don't have to rent space in a community garden many blocks or miles away from where we are. We can observe and interact and find ways forward. And Kathy's garden is great for this. And she even includes how many hours of full sun a particular space might get and what you can grow in it, from peas and lettuce with as little as 2 hours, up to blueberries, beans, chives, grapes, and more with 5 hours of full sun. The next garden was developed and launched by Professor Vikram Bhatt at McGill University as part of the Edible Campus. And it provides a variety of ways in which to use currently unused space on campus And we could adapt this then even further to other areas, not just schools or universities, but also to businesses. To take the ideas of edible landscaping that Michael presented to us and spread those around to different areas. As a business, perhaps as a form of guerrilla gardening, there are all kinds of options and things that we can do to get more food growing. The last garden that I'll mention in this is Rebecca Neen's Backyard Brewer's Garden, because I like brewing beer, making mead, making wine. And though I haven't brewed beer in a number of years because of being on a gluten-free diet and just finally getting access to gluten-free grains recently, I like the idea of coming together and sharing a drink with friends. That the social aspect of it, but also the social aspects of gardening. I have several friends who brew and vint and make mead, which I don't remember the technical term for at the moment, but that here are options that we have available to do small-scale backyard production of these beverages that we enjoy. That can be gifts to share with others, or depending on where you live and what the rules are, maybe it becomes a business for you to become one of those craft brewers, or vinters, or distillers, working out of your backyard polyculture. And Rebecca provides lots of different ideas on what we can do to make pumpkin ale or to use different flowers as adjuncts within it, even, you know, selecting what hops we wish to grow. And she provides some different suggestions for those. But it's a very nice garden design, and I want to use some of the ideas from it in my own yard. But those are just six gardens that I mentioned that I pulled out from browsing through the book. There are more gardens that can be used in the urban environment. There are three different ones that could be used for a front yard. There are different ideas for recycling or upcycling materials like pallets or cinder blocks to build garden beds. There are children-friendly gardens. When it comes to that idea of meeting people where they're at, within this book are numerous garden designs that we can adapt to the permaculture model to help get functioning gardens off the ground that people can be interested in and use in the area that they have around them. To bring the focus back to Zone 1 and Zone 2, to move us away from planting more and more space, but to make the areas that we do use more functional and more useful. If you're new to gardening, I'd really recommend picking up Groundbreaking Food Gardens by Nikki Jabor and Michael Judd's Edible Landscaping with a Permaculture Twist. I think that they provide a nice introduction to these ideas. And if you're reading through the introductory permaculture list that I posted a while back, and you're looking at designing and implementing a home garden, these are the books that I'd recommend that you move to after you're done reading Masanobu Fukuoka's The One Straw Revolution and Donella Meadows' Thinking in Systems. Read Michael's book, because there's permaculture in there that you can use to expand on those philosophical underpinnings of permaculture, and then actually get out there and start doing the work, as Michael suggested in his interview, and really begin to get your hands dirty. And while you're doing that, in parallel to your on-the-ground work, read Holmgren's Permaculture, Principles and Pathways Beyond Sustainability. Read Rosemary Morrow's Earth User's Guide to Permaculture. And together, as you start putting that first garden together, you'll have your first piece to put in your permaculture portfolio and show some design that you've done, some work that you've accomplished, and have some of those successes that lead to long-term confidence that's necessary to do this kind of work. But even if you're not on that novitiate's path, if you're a more experienced permaculture practitioner, I still think this is a good book, because there's a lot of information here that serves as a shortcut when working with a client to help develop a Zone 1 or Zone 2 garden design quickly, and then allow you more time to work on the, you know, trickier or fiddly bits of permaculture design. So overall, I do recommend this book. It's beautiful, well put together, and especially at the price point of $19.99, I think it's hard to beat. If there's any weakness, it's in the appendix plant listings, because that section consists of three categories: edibles, ornamentals, and green manures, and all it does is list the common and Latin names for the plants. I would have liked to have seen more information about the growing requirements, you know, the amount of shade that particular plants can generally tolerate, you know, what zones that they might be best suited for. However, having spoken with several people about publishing and who are in that industry, there probably wasn't a lot of room left over in the book in order to do something like that. So it's really a minor quibble. Overall, it's a great book, and there are other resources that we can use to fill in the blanks that don't get presented in the appendix. And that's going to end the review. And a couple of quick updates. This book will be included in the Traveling Permaculture Library Project. If you're involved, great. You don't have to do anything. This book will go in the mail soon as part of that. For those of you who haven't signed up and would like to, or if this is your first time hearing about it, go to thepermaculturepodcast.com/library for more information. To sign up, send me an email, librarian@thepermaculturepodcast.com, and include your mailing address. And I'll put you on the list, and as books become available, they will get mailed to you. All I ask is that if you do receive a book from this project, once you read it, be willing to mail it on to the next person. As this show is listener-supported, I need your help to keep it on the air in order to be able to take care of the things that are necessary so that this show supports itself. And that relies on you. Go to thepermaculturepodcast.com/support. There you'll find some drop-down boxes where you can become either a recurring monthly supporter or make a one-time contribution. Anything you can do helps and is greatly appreciated. Also, registration for the online PDCs is now open. Go to thepermaculturepodcast.com/PDC to find out more information. Lastly, if you'd like to get in touch, if you have questions or comments, email me, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com. You can give me a call, 717-827-6266. Join in the conversations at facebook.com/thepermaculturepodcast, or you can find me on Twitter where I am @permaculturecst. And one thing before I forget, these short shows need a name. If you go to the Facebook page for the show and scroll down, you'll see a listing of all the names that people suggested. Go through there, find the ones you like, leave a comment voting for your favorite, or send me an email with your vote, give me a call with your vote, however you need to get it to me, get your vote in for the short show names. The leader by leaps and bounds is Permabyte. If you like that, then go help add to that weight. If you don't like it, go vote and maybe change the direction where that's going. However, either way, whoever has the winning name for the show will receive a copy of one of the books from my personal library, either Howard T. Odom's Environment, Power, and Society, Masanobu Fukuoka's The One Straw Revolution, or a copy of Donella Meadows' Thinking in Systems. And that's going to make this a wrap. Until the next time, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other.